One of the surprise hit movies of 1994 was Pulp Fiction. As a result of the film's success, Quentin Tarantino became the hot director to watch, the career of John Travolta was revived, and surf music from the 60s featured in the movie was suddenly in. But our rock historian Ed Ward never forgot the sounds of the waves and the music it inspired.
Bushy blonde hairdo, surfing USA. If everybody had an ocean. These words, uttered when the surf music boom was well underway, sum up what captured the imaginations of America's teenagers in the early 60s and propelled a regional fad into a national sound. By the time the British invasion squashed it flat, surf music had reached so far inland that it was possible to see kids driving Woodies, 1950s station wagons with wood trim, with boards strapped to the top, in places like Dayton, Ohio, and Lubbock, Texas. Surfing is centuries old and developed in Hawaii. It was introduced to California in 1907 when George Freeth, a Hawaiian champion, began demonstrating it at Redondo Beach as a way of attracting crowds. It really took off in the 20s when Duke Kahanamoku, an Olympic swimming champion, began shooting the curl in front of wowed spectators. Duke's redwood board weighed over 100 pounds, and it wasn't until post-war technology developed inexpensive lightweight boards that lots of people started surfing. When surfers gathered at the Rendezvous Ballroom in Balboa to work off a hard day's fun, they danced to Dick Dale and the Deltones.
Let's go drinking!
Dale's real name was Mansour, and his Lebanese-American family owned a Greek restaurant at which young Dick played bouzouki and guitar. Encouraged by his father, he built a band and began putting on dances for the surfers and recording on a family-owned label. Dale knew the scene. He himself surfed, and his fellow surfers filled the Rendezvous during 1960 and 61 by the thousands. By the time Let's Go Trippin' hit the charts in late 1961, the record industry in California was ripe for something new after years of domination by slushy pop from the East Coast. Dale and dozens of others were there to give it to them. The Shantae's Pipeline pretty much epitomizes surf music. The title evokes a legendary surfing site in Hawaii, it has a Spanish-Arabic feel to it, a legacy of Dick Dale, and the guitar is fed through a Fender reverb unit, the quintessential sound modifier of surf music, which Leo Fender developed for Dale in 1960. Pipeline went on to sell over a million copies and charted in England. In 1963, the floodgates opened. Hundreds of surf instrumentals were recorded in California studios, mostly by bands working the surf dance circuit. The Beach Boys, of course, epitomized surf music to many, although few surf records had vocals, and the band quickly moved beyond surfing to more general teen topics. Still, in 1963, they weren't about to forget about the beach in their name.
I have watched you on the shore.
Some say the Kennedy assassination was the event that popped surf music's idyllic bubble, but I think it was just that the forum was so narrow the teens wanted a change, and the Beatles gave it to them. And even though Jimi Hendrix, who used to go see Dick Dale when he was in the Air Force, sneered that we'd never have to hear surf music again, the culture that spawned it continued, and continues in California. And so does surf music. Not only does this surf version of Dizzy Gillespie's Night in Tunisia date from 1990, but the band, Laika and the Cosmonauts, is Finnish. In the end, though, surf music's real legacy is that it provided white American teenagers with the first pop form that didn't seek to imitate a black one, and created a legion of young guitarists with the technology and the chops to take on the British invasion and what lay beyond. Even Jimi Hendrix could have dug that.
Ed Ward writes about music and is based in Berlin. The music he played came from a box set on Rhino Records called Cowabunga, the Surf Box.